If you'll turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 22. We're going to be in verse 25 tonight. Exodus 22, we'll start in verse 25. In this passage, it talks about business practices in regard to the poor. Okay? Being just in regard to the poor. And this is one of those things that in our society today, we have lost a bit of this kind of thinking. This used to be sort of in our thoughts. Now, just because somebody doesn't have as much money doesn't necessarily mean you have to give them a discount. Okay, that's not what this is teaching. But what it is saying is recognize don't oppress people because they're poor. And we do have, you know, in our culture this idea of if I can cheat you out of money, I will. If I can take something you have, I will. And that's become more and more pervasive, the idea of being honest in your dealings, even to the point where it would disadvantage you. That's the way Christians used to be brought up. What I'm finding, and I'm having to remind myself of this as a pastor, the things I was raised and taught are not being taught always at home to children in Christian homes. And so what that means is that sometimes I have to say these things from the pulpit, things that, you know, were just sort of assumed that if you go through the checkout, and I realize this is not a poor person, this is maybe a rich corporation, but if you go through the checkout at Publix or Walmart or something and you pay in cash and they give you a five in change when they should have given you a one, you alert them and say, look, I only deserve a dollar. And usually if you do that, the cashier will look at you like you're from Mars. Because they're like, why would you point this out? It was in your advantage. And, you know, when you tell them, well, I just, you know, it's not my money. I believe in being honest. They'll be like, oh, well, thank you. You know, it keeps their drawer from being off and they don't get written up or something. But it's one of those things where they just think that's really strange. Whereas growing up, I mean, my grandparents all did that. My parents did that. My aunts and uncles did that. They were just honest in those kinds of things. And they didn't want to take people for a ride or take things that they didn't earn and this kind of thing. And then certainly with people who were poorer, or these kinds of things, there wasn't this idea that you should take advantage of them, people who are poor or naive. I mean, think about how many scams there are out there now, right, where they'll be glad to scam some elderly person out of their money, out of tens of thousands of dollars out of their bank account by pretending that you're their, you know, the person will call pretending to be in their imprisoned grandchild or to pretending to be. I remember I was in Puerto Rico at Puerto Rico Baptist College talking to one of the staff there, and he said, yeah, I got a phone call and they claimed to be my grandson. And then I reported it to the police, and the police at the phone found that the phone call was being made from prison. So prisoners in prison somehow are getting use of the phone in order to scam people. And you think, there's something really messed up here. Usually I thought if you were in prison, you couldn't just make phone calls. But and then if you did, I thought they were monitored. And so you're making, I guess maybe they're slipping the guard a little bit extra or something for in exchange for it. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, obviously something not real good is going on there. And so, yeah, but they think nothing of, here's this poor person who's older, who maybe doesn't have a lot of savings and barely making it, and if I steal their money, there's nothing wrong with that. Well, there is everything wrong with that. The Lord knows what's going on in those cases, and we're going to look here at these commandments in Exodus chapter 22, verse 25. If thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as an usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. Okay, usury is not the word we usually use now. The idea is interest. Okay, sometimes you will, in American law, see the word usury. I'm not an attorney nor a son of an attorney, but my understanding is that term used to be used to mean exorbitant interest. You know what I'm saying? The kind of thing like, oh yeah, you can borrow this from me at 40% or some kind of 25% or some kind of level that was extremely high. And that was considered, you know, inappropriate. But this has the idea of interest at all. In other words, the point here is if you're loaning money to a poor person. Now, let's describe poor as well. Okay, in our society, poor people drive older cars, live in older homes, have older cell phones, have older flat screen TVs, and eat out at McDonald's or Chili's instead of at Ruth's Chris. Okay, now if you know what I'm saying, my point is that what we call poor in America is generally not poor worldwide. that what is poverty worldwide is not like poverty here in the United States. That if you look at it, the average, you know, the average person under the poverty line in America is actually overweight. Well, that's not because they're having trouble finding food. The issue is that inexpensive food is often more, is less healthy for you often. So vegetables cost more than ho-hos. So you can buy a box of ho-hos cheap and feel, you know, filled up, and but yet it's not healthy for you, and you gain weight. And so in our society, oftentimes, it's not that there's a lack of the necessities of life. Okay, but in the ancient world, a poor person was somebody who was often lacking the necessities of life. You have to understand there were a lot of people that they were just day laborers. And what they did is every day they'd go to the marketplace, to the city gate, or to wherever, to try to find work. And they'd hope that somebody would hire them that day, and they would make enough money to go buy food and you know, maybe fill a couple other basic needs that day, and then they were out of money, and they had to go to work tomorrow to get their out, to get more. So, you know, we talk about people living paycheck to paycheck, but this is worse than that, okay? Because when you're living paycheck to paycheck, generally a person is still spending some of that paycheck on things that they don't need. You know, they bought some little trinket on Amazon or eBay, or they DoorDashed food to themselves rather than, and I'm not saying it's sinful if you can afford to do that and you want to have the food delivered to your house. That's not a sin. But the fact is that you're not like scratching by and barely have enough money for food if you can pay for it to be delivered. You know, that's not how it works. You'd be cooking your own food at home. That's more economical. But in their world, this was literally, these people would work and they would use the money to go buy the grain or whatever, you know, to make the flour and to make the bread that they need. And so they were just buying the necessities of life, and that's what they had. And they'd feed themselves and maybe their family with it the best they could. That's what it meant to be poor. You don't know where your food is going to come from unless you work. Okay. Now, we have these interesting statistics in America. So, for example, you'll see numbers of this many Americans suffer with hunger in America. And I look those up sometimes, and they it's not that there aren't hungry people in America, so I don't mean to downplay that. But the way that they do those numbers, for example, is that they have people that the government categorizes as food at risk. And what that means is their finances are unstable enough that they might not have enough income in this month to buy the necessities of food. That doesn't mean that person's going hungry. Okay, because that doesn't mean that person didn't get food stamps, or it doesn't mean that that person, you know, didn't have food in the pantry already. It just means they're in a certain category of income and stability of income. That means they could be. That's not the same as many other parts of the world. In the developing world, well, there are literally people who don't have any food. They eat one meal a day, and that's what they get. Okay, so there are still many people in the world that, like, a dollar or two a day is their entire income for a day. And so that means you can basically buy food and that's it. You don't have any extra money. So that's the kind of poverty. This is the ancient world kind of poverty that we're talking about. And the standard of living has risen worldwide. So for as much as politicians and others like to criticize capitalism, the fact is the more capitalistic societies have become, including the developing world, the less poverty there have been in those places. Okay, in many places, you look at places where there is hunger, and many times it's not because that there aren't resources to feed those people, it's because there's some kind of instability in that place. So, for example, there's probably hungry people in Ukraine right now. But it's not because Ukraine doesn't have any resources, it's because they're in the middle of a war, and getting food to them, and industries have been shut down and all kinds of things. That means they're in danger. So it's war that caused the hunger, not economic situations outside of war, if that makes sense. So that's not to minimize any of those things, but I want us to understand that the kind of person this has in mind here is the kind of person who is hungry and doesn't always know where their food's going to come from. That kind of person, when they need to borrow money from you, basically what he's saying, what the Lord is saying here, is that when you loan them money, you're loaning them money to help them, not to make money off them. Don't charge them interest when they're a fellow Israelite, is what he's saying. Okay. Now, this has been misunderstood sometimes as a condemnation of charging interest ever. So, for example, during the Middle Ages in Europe, the Roman Catholic Church interpreted it as sinful to charge interest to people. And so, therefore, there was you couldn't get a loan. Now, that might sound good. Okay, I don't want to be in debt. But if you know how business works and capitalism works, debt is part of the process. okay, in a capitalistic society. So yes, as in your own household, it's a great thing to be out of debt, right? That's good. That's a good thing. But if you are a major corporation, if you're whatever major corporation, and you're going to build, you know, 12 new locations, you borrow the money to build those new locations usually. They leverage that money to do that, and that's part of it. And that was part of the, you know, by borrowing that money, then you make so much more that then you pay that loan back, but you've made so much money you can keep expanding. And that was true. What happened was eventually as the restrictions on charging interest were lifted in the late Middle Ages in Europe, that led to the rise of banking. Because banks could then pay interest because they were charging interest. So then people would feel like good to put their money in the bank because they could make money there. And then the banks would charge interest to those businesses that wanted to borrow the money from them. And it caused actually an expansion of the economy in Europe. And so the idea of never charging interest isn't what this passage is teaching. Okay? And we all, you know, we all may look at this and go, hey, there are times that most of the people in our church would not own a home if you couldn't get a loan, right? Because if you had to have $400,000 in hand to go buy a house in Central Florida right now, it would take you a very long time to save up that amount of money. But the fact that you can go to a bank and prove that you have a certain amount of income and that you have a stable job and that based on that they will loan you a certain amount of money for 30 years of payments, that helps you to own your own home. And for most people, they consider that a blessing, that even though they have a mortgage, they view it as a blessing that they have their own place, right? But that's due to the fact that there's interest being charged. No bank is going to give you that money without interest. So that's simply how it works. I'm not saying, obviously, you know, if you can get to the place where you pay off your home, that's a great thing. If you get to the place where, you know, you're not paying any interest on things, that's a great thing. But the fact is that there are some times in life, especially for people starting out trying to get into a home or something like that, they save up a money for a down payment rather than saving up the entire cost of the home. And that has helped people. But again, it needs to be honest. It wouldn't be helpful if their interest rate was 40%. Right? Because you'd pay so much extra that it wouldn't be worth buying the house. You might as well rent. But if you could get, I know interest rates are up almost 7% right now on home loans. But the fact is, historically, that's still a pretty low number. Some of you remember, I remember my parents having a mortgage and telling me that, oh yeah, we had 15% and we thought we were doing really well. That you get into the early 80s and mortgage rates were up near 20%. And people were just very thankful to get something in the mid-teens as a mortgage rate percentage-wise. So 7% is still historically pretty low. But that has been a help to people. So this isn't forbidding ever charging interest. In other words, it's not saying it's a Christian can never be a banker. That's not what this passage is saying. Or a righteous person can never be a banker. That's not what it's saying. What it's saying is that don't charge interest to the poor. You should be helping the poor, not profiting off the back of the poor. Your poor Israelite, fellow Israelite. And wouldn't we do the same thing within the church? Now, I'm always cautious about this. One thing, we do have a policy as a church that we don't loan money to people. The church is not a bank, so we don't loan money to people. I've had people call me and say, Pastor, I need some money. Can you loan me some money? Can the church loan me some money? I said, no, that's going to really change the relationship you have with your church if I loan you money. And so then the issue I would have then is, well, why don't you go to the credit union? Borrow some money there. You know? In some cases, they could. In some of these cases, people could. They just felt bad about doing that. They thought, oh, I don't want to go into debt. Well, you're in debt if you borrow it from the church. So it's no different. I don't want you to be in debt to us. But in some cases, they can't. And then at another point then, as a church, do we want to be in the place of what do we do if somebody doesn't pay the debt back? We just don't want to be there, okay? Now, in most of those cases, you know what we've done? We've investigated the situation. In one case, it was a wife who called me and said, I need to borrow this money and whatever. And I called their home and talked to the husband, and I said, now, you guys are having trouble. And he's like, we got money in the bank. I don't know what she's thinking. We don't need to borrow any money. But the wife was confused and thought, you know, that they needed some money and needed to borrow it. And she was honestly starting to get dementia, and so that was part of what was going on. But, you know, you have this situation going on. They were fine financially. But if it is a person, in some cases, where we have found that there really is a need there, we don't seek to loan them money. We might give them some money out of benevolence. That's why our benevolence fund exists, to give them some money out of benevolence. Or we might say, you know what, we're not going to loan you the money, but I know brother so-and-so in the church has got a company and he needs help. Would you be willing to work part-time for him and make the money? You know, and try to find some resources that would help them get it. But in other words, the last thing we would want to do as a church would be charge interest to an in-need brother or sister in the congregation. We either give you the money or we find a way for you to earn the money or something like that. We don't want to be profiting off of them. Now, that's very different than a bank or whatever organization that might loan money in order to sell their product. You know, most of the auto companies, right, have their own credit arm. You have Ford has a credit arm. General Motors has a credit arm. Why? I remember I grew up in the Detroit area, and I remember talking to a friend that I went to high school with, and he worked for what at the time was GMAC, which was General Motors Credit. And he said GMAC makes as much money as General Motors does. In other words, they make as much money on the interest of the car loans as they do us on the profits of selling the cars. So, you know, they had a vested interest to give you a reasonable loan because it, one, sells their car, and then two, they make money off of that. Why should they let the bank make the money? They can make the money themselves. And so there's you know, lots of reasons that you would see these interest loans going, but they're not to be done by Christians to a brother or sister, or in this case, to a fellow Israelite who's literally in need. In other words, if you find out that a brother or sister in the church doesn't have enough money to buy groceries, you shouldn't say, well, you know, I'll loan you $100 to go buy groceries. You give me $110 next week. No. Go buy them some groceries. Or if you can't afford to do that, let the church know. Let their deacon know. Let me know. And we'll see what we can do. You know, so for the vast majority of the time, 99% of the time, the church is going to make sure that person has something to eat. You say, what about that other 1%? Well, there may be a few instances in which the person is lazy and isn't working. And the Bible says if a person won't work, they ought not to eat. So in other words, hunger motivates you to go get a job. So in those cases, but that's usually, that's got to be something that we're very, very familiar with. And we have had it over the years, where you get somebody who keeps coming for help because they're mismanaging their money or they're not working intentionally or something like that. And then we're just not going to give them money out of benevolence because they're abusing it. They're using the benevolence like it's a safety net so they can mismanage their money. They're like, oh, the church will give me some for benevolence so I can buy groceries so I can afford to buy this extra splurge on Amazon or whatever. No, that's not what the benevolence fund is for, okay? It's to help people who are literally in need. But the idea here is if there's a poor person, we want to help them. And we want to make sure that that's the case. I remember having a car drive up here one night after a service, and the man came up, got out of his car, and he said, let me introduce myself. I'm missionary so-and-so. And he had a prayer letter and all this kind of stuff. And he said, you know, we've got nowhere to stay tonight, and we have nothing to eat. Could you give me some money? And I said, where's your sending church? And he gave me the name and the phone number, and I'm like, let me call the number. So I called the number, and there was no answer at the number. And I said, honestly, you know, if any one of the missionaries that we support, I found out didn't have a place to stay tonight and didn't have anything to eat, our church would be wiring you money, like right now. Why are you not reaching out to one of your supporting churches while you're showing up in the parking lot of a random church? Well, I'll tell you what was going on. It was a scam. You know, they're lying, and they're doing that to get some money. They're not missionaries at all. They just drive around and say they're missionaries, and then churches give them money. Okay? In other words, there's no accountability. I don't know who they are. Their mission board, it looked like anything you could print off your computer. You could make a flashy-looking letter on your computer and have some missions organization that supposedly exists and whatever. And that's all they were doing. But the fact is that if that was the case, we'd make sure our missionaries are taken care of, right? They need somewhere to stay. They need food to eat. We're going to make sure that happens. We're not going to let them go hungry. Same thing with a church member. That's the way it's going to be. We're going to try to take care of each other. And that's what this is saying. In other words, wouldn't it be strange if in a business meeting we got up and said, you know, we could really leverage the benevolence fund a lot better if we gave out loans to people in the church. And then we'd make money off of it. And the church would take an extra money. And, you know, we could use that to paint something or to pay the light bill or whatever. People would be like, no, that's not why I gave to benevolence. I have a friend who pastors a church, and years ago, when he first became the pastor of the church, he was looking through the books, through the accounting. And there was this one account that just had a number on it and a vague title, and he couldn't figure out what it was. And there was a sizable amount of money in there. And he had promised the deacons that the first year he was there, he wouldn't fire anyone. That they had a Christian school and they had other things. And so he sits down with the business manager of the church and he says, "What is this account?" And the man looked at him and said, "I'm not going to tell you that." And he said, "What?" He said, "What is this account?" He said, "I'm not going to tell you that. That's my private business. You don't need to know what that is." He's like, "No, this is in the church books. What are you talking about?" And so the pastor said, "Look, I promised the deacons I wouldn't fire anybody, but I promise if I take this situation to the deacons, they're going to let me fire you. Because you've got like tens of thousands of dollars on the church books that are unaccounted for. Nobody knows what this money is." And the guy says, "Fine." He said, "That's my money." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "That's my personal money. I put it in the church account. And when church members, you know, need money, I give them a loan at a lower interest rate than they would get at a bank. And then I make the interest." And the pastor said, "So is that taxable income for you?" "No, because it's in the church account, which is tax exempt." So this guy was laundering money through the church as the business manager. Well, he got fired. Rightfully so, right? In other words, that's contrary to even this principle. You don't, when there's a church member in need, you don't loan them money, you give it to them. Otherwise, it's not the job of the church to be a bank. And again, for us, in this regard, generally, you know, it's been a practice of mine. I would commend this to you. Don't loan money to brothers and sisters in the church or, you know, unless that's your business. The question is, why are they coming to you for the loan and not the credit union, not the bank? Well, it's because they're a credit risk and they can't afford, you know, the bank won't loan them the money. Now, if the group who makes money off of making loans says this is a risky loan, then it's probably a risky loan for you too. And what that means is when they don't pay you back, now you've got an issue of how do you treat a brother or sister in the church who just took $10,000 of your dollars and won't give them back to you. And I've seen these situations in churches. So it's better not to make that loan. Now, if the person has a need and says, "Look, my business is failing and I need $10,000, and you go, "Oh, I got an extra 10 grand laying around," and you want to give it to them, give it to them. Fine. Some people can do that. Good, fine, help them out. But if you loan it to them, it really creates a sticky situation. And it's the same thing with family. You loan money to family and it's going to, you know, make heartache in that situation. And so, again, the heart should be to care about the poor, not to try to make an extra dollar off of them. Verse 26, "If thou would all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge, thou shalt deliver it unto him, by that the sun goeth down." So here's what he says. Okay, in the ancient world, they had an outer garment, which we would call like a robe. They would wear a tunic under it. Okay, so you weren't walking around unclothed if you had your outer garment off. But your outer garment was your blanket at night. It was what protected you from the sun and these kinds of things. And so what this is saying is, if you loan this person money and you take his outer garment, you take the comforter off of his bed as the collateral. That's exactly what this is saying. Then give it back to him before nighttime comes, because he's going to be cold. For that is his covering only. It is his raiment for his skin. Wherein shall he sleep? And it shall come to pass, when he crieth unto me, I will hear him, for I am gracious. In other words, you're making this guy shiver at night, and he's got nothing to keep warm with. Now that tells you how poor this person is. If the most valuable thing you have is a shirt off your back, to use that expression, and that's all you've got for collateral, you don't have much of value, right? If you're going to put up collateral for a loan, they usually are going to want something that has some value. You know, you maybe have a bank account. You maybe have a bond. Maybe you have a house. Maybe you have a paid off car or something that you're using as the collateral for the loan. And then that's what a bank or whatever who's loaning you money would take if you don't pay it back. Okay, but what this is saying is this person is so poor that all they have is the shirt off their back. You take their shirt, you take their comforter off their bed, and they got nothing to sleep under at night. When they're cold at night and they cry out to God, basically the Lord views you as having preyed on them. Now, the fact that you give it back to them at night means that it's not much leverage, is it? In other words, the whole point here is you're loaning the money to help them out. If you can't afford to lose the money, then you shouldn't just be giving them the money. They should be going to somebody else. Also, we need to remember this as well, that there are times that there are people who can help us, but it is not the obligation of every family member or Christian brother or sister we know to help us. And I've seen people get angry about this, where somebody says, "You know, well, I was about to lose my house and all I needed was like $1,000. And I called one of the rich people at church and asked them if they could give me $1,000 and they wouldn't. And I lost my house because of them." No, you lost your house because of you. It's not their fault that they didn't give you the $1,000. They decided not to. It's their money. They can choose not to do that. Don't blame them. Okay? Don't take that out on them. Now, sometimes people find themselves in places where they have all kinds of financial reversals and they lose a home, and it'd be really nice to help them out. And if you can do that and you want to do that and the Lord lays that on your heart, fine, but it's not a loan. You give them money, whatever. But the fact is that, we don't have an obligation to pay everybody else's loan in the church. If you borrow money and you can't pay it back, you took the risk to borrow the money and you made the commitment to pay it back. You didn't commit you and all your friends to pay it back. You committed yourself to pay it back. You're the one who signed the note. You're the one who's responsible for it. Okay? Now, it's very different. What does the Bible say? Godliness with contentment is great gain, right? So if you'll be godly, love the Lord, live a righteous life in the eyes of God, do your best to obey Him, not because you earn your salvation that way, but that's an expression of our love toward God. If you do that, and then you're content with what you have, that's being rich. That's great gain. Great gain means you're rich. Then you're rich. You're as rich as anybody. There's lots of rich people who are not content. And they have no character or godliness. But what it's saying is, godliness with contentment is great gain. With food and raiment, let us there be content. What are the two things in that passage that Paul is saying you need? You need something to eat and you need clothes to wear to stay warm in. Now I understand we could probably put some other things on that list like shelter, okay, somewhere safe to sleep, things like that. But basically, there's only so many things that are needs. And you might say, okay, I have certain things that I'm doing, and so therefore, because of my business, I have needs. My business needs this. In other words, if I'm a plumber, I need my tools to be able to fix the plumbing, right? Because you can't do your job without the tools, so you need the tools. So there are some times that you can justify going to the store to buy the new pipe wrench because you need it, in that sense, to do your business. But as far as human survival, you need something to eat and clothes to wear and probably a place of shelter. That's it. And so if the person isn't lacking that, it's not necessarily my job to make sure that they drive a new car. Okay? And I've seen this as well in the church where, we said, okay, is there somebody who has a need? And a need was pointed out to me once. And I sent a couple people, said, "Hey, Pastor, if there's anybody in the church that ever has a need, let us know." And I said, "Well, this family I heard has a need. Their landscaping, I guess, has gotten overgrown. And they've just been struggling to make ends meet, and they're working so many hours they haven't been able to keep their yard up and this kind of stuff." And so this family went over there and they came back to me and said, "Pastor, I was glad to serve them, but their house is twice the square footage of mine. And they have two new cars in the driveway. And I'm driving a 10-year-old car. So I felt like I was doing their responsibility by doing their yard work." And there is a point to that. In other words, we don't mind helping people. Somebody gets injured, maybe they throw their back out, they're flat on their back, they can't mow the lawn, somebody goes mows the lawn for them. That's a different story. But to say, "I'm working 70 hours and I can't mow the lawn, if somebody in the church could do it for me for free, that would be really nice." Yes, it is really nice, but the fact is you're working 70 hours because you've got two $700 car loans and a $2,500 mortgage. And so the values are up there really high, and that's fine. If you can afford that and you've got that income level, great. But if you don't, then, maybe what the thing to do is to scale back your things so that you can maintain the stuff you have. If you have a really nice car but you can never fix it when it breaks, then your budget's off. There's something wrong with your budget. So if cars break, houses break, things like that happen, you have to have some budget for those things, and that's part of the planning. So let's not confuse poverty with financial shortfalls. Those aren't always the same thing, okay? So in other words, it's not always my job to make somebody financial shortfall, but it is my job to make sure that a brother or sister in Christ doesn't go hungry. If they're working hard and they just go, if they're hungry, they need something to eat, let's get them something to eat, okay? If they need some clothes to wear, let's get them some clothes to wear. If they need some wheels to get to work and we can get them in, we find out somebody in the church, and this has happened many times, has got an older car that they're trying to sell or donate, and we can put them in that car, great. Now they're in a car that's reliable. That's a great thing. That's helping one another. That's what we ought to do as a church. But that's very different than going, "Well, I feel so bad that brother so-and-so, he had to sell his Cadillac and now he's driving a Chevy and I feel real bad for him." Well, I feel bad for him too, but I don't think the church has any obligation to make sure he can stay in the Cadillac, if that makes sense. We don't have an obligation to make sure he can drive a BMW instead of a Toyota or something like that, okay? And so we do need to recognize this could be abused. You can abuse the good heart of people. And that's not what this passage is calling for. What it's saying is, don't loan money to the poor and make an extra buck off their back when they can barely eat. That's not righteousness, okay? Now, it's not completely saying you can't loan money and earn interest. You get a really wealthy person who wants to borrow the money, to expand their business. That's up to a bank and whatever. That's not sinful. But what this is saying is, with the poor people, don't make an extra dime off their back. This is where I do get a little uncomfortable with some business models out there. Okay, there are some business models that target the poorest of people. Some I don't care as much about. I have a friend that I went to college with, and her dad worked at a Christian camp. The Christian camp is in California in the high desert, halfway between Las Vegas and Los Angeles. And he said a lot of people would roll into the camp in their BMW and would be like, I have no money for gas to get back to L.A. Well, why? Because they gambled it all away in Las Vegas. And they'd say, can I get some money? And he'd say, well, what do you have to sell? Then he'd get nice car radios and, he'd get whatever. They'd have, oh, I got my Rolex or whatever, and he'd get good deals on these things because, now, in that case, this person is, they're not going hungry. They just don't have any money left because they gambled it. And so in that case, he wasn't viewing this as this person is poor. This is somebody who's wealthy, who lives a nice standard of living, but was foolish with their money, and they need a little money. They shouldn't expect, because they were foolish with their money, for you to fill their gas tank. You're going to have to sell something. That's the way it works. And it's pretty lonely. You get on that road in California between Vegas and L.A., there's some pretty lonely stretches there. You want to make sure you don't run out of gas in that area, okay? But, he worked at this Christian camp, and he was in charge of the horses there. And he was a cowboy that was in charge of the horses. But he'd buy these things off these people, and he'd get a good deal on them. So, they had to part with it because they put themselves in that situation. Those aren't poor people, okay? That's somebody who's wealthy who just gambled too much. That's very different than saying a Christian comes along your path, especially a brother or sister in your own congregation, members of your own church, and they have a need. That's not the person to make an extra dollar off of or to take advantage of in any way.